Orlo betrays Lenny. Fort Smallwood, 1931. In the 2 years since his last meal with her, roasted potatoes, horta with lemon, and thick pork chops from Smutex, a feast at the home of a Confederate a few days before he unveiled the Velvet Room, the junk man passed most of his time alone and some of his time with a passing woman or two. Minnie Fisher had a degree she'd never used and a motorcycle with a sidecar. She was fond of apple pie that came in white boxes tied with red string, and when there was nothing left on her plate but crust, moistened the crumbs with expensive sherry. Pulling up alongside Orlo's pony cart near St. Wenceslaus yesterday, aviator goggles atop a leather helmet, she smiled into his eyes and said, "Race?" And early this morning, before the sun, Orlo left his horse and wagon to go chicken necking with Minnie some 20 miles south of the city, at a fort named for a Revolutionary War hero, now a park. This is what Glushakow would have seen had Jacob set his easel on the lawn. The rear ends, one wide, one flat, of a free thinker in denim pants and tennis shoes, alongside the salvage king of Baltimore, oil and vinegar kneeling hip to hip at the end of a pier in late September, long after the crab feasts of shore picnics and backyard parties of the summer. Early autumn, when the Big Jimmies were running. Lowering the chicken necks into the Patapsco on kite string, Orlo remembered what a fellow Arabber had said at the stables that morning, a guy who specialized in fruit and vegetables and had no interest in the crap other people threw away. A lie always comes around to bite you where you don't want to be bitten. "People love lies," Orlo told him, as he helped load the man's cart with strawberries, turning down a dozen ears of corn. "The world don't run on steam. It runs on lies." Around the corner from the stables, he paid a nickel for 2 pounds of chicken necks from Yankeloff's, when he could have gotten twice as much for free at the Broadway market. But on Broadway, he might bump into her, and so invested half a dime to protect the lie. Not the one everyone knew, kids in the alleys making up jump rope rhymes about the junk man and the Greek girl who pickled pig feet at the end of Clinton Street. A deeper evasion. The one that said he was fine, that he was dandy, that spending the day with a know-it-all who looked like Amelia Earhart when she turned one way and Eleanor Roosevelt from the other, a La Follette progressive who thought it grand to move among the people, that this was an acceptable template for the rest of his life. Dinner and diversion, sex and gravy, lies smarting and crabs biting on the morning tide as Orlo pulled the strings ever so slowly, Minnie dipping the net in smooth, uninterrupted motions, the way she'd swung the breaststroke at Holyoke, the bushel filling steadily. "Beauties," said Minnie. Orlo moved from line to line. He tacked a half dozen to the pilings, 3 necks on each string, hoping to catch enough for a sumptuous brunch, sell a bushel to a saloon back in the neighborhood. It was good time for finding junk in the debris of wrecked lives, a bad time for selling it. He would take the rest home to pick for crab cakes. Alone on the front porch, crab cakes and deviled eggs in a tray molded to hold a dozen of them, smooth green glass like the river beneath him, and mustard from a tin, Coleman's, red on yellow, dry, not wet. Another delusion. He may take the time to make the eggs, pushing the yolks through a strainer to get them good and creamy, but he'd never bring out the special dishes to eat by himself. Anything would do. Anything did do in the last 2 years. "Look here," sang Minnie. 2 bushels in 3 hours, taking photographs with a Rolleiflex as Orlo tonged a couple dozen into a blue enamel pot above a campfire. He had a jug of Prohibition beer. A cup of it mixed with river water and a little vinegar covered the bottom of the pot. He had German homebrew from Mr. Kugler on Macon Street, the old Kraut sauerbraten better than Billy Hausner's, and Minnie brought paper cups and mallets in a wicker basket. As the crab steamed, layers of prize jimmies and fat sooks coated with kosher salt and coarsely cracked black pepper, Orlo covered a picnic table with newspaper, the jug holding down one end, the basket weighted with cutlery at the other. News of the day and the day before, fortune tellers the Olivetti hacks did not claim to be. Josephine Baker survives bombing of Orient Express. Washington senators sell Pinky Hargrave to the Orioles. Unemployment at 17%. Hungry people coveting pig feet. Hoover declares Star Spangled Banner national anthem. Idiot junk man distracts himself with a mere mortal. Orlo pulled a back fin from a big one, the biggest in front of Minnie, going cold while she took pictures, and he sucked the juice from the hole before removing the other fins, both claws, and cracking the back. It was moving toward noon, and the sun was high, hot for the far side of Labor Day, with the 2-year anniversary of that Last Supper just a kiss away. The more Minnie talked, yakety yak yak yak, the quicker the hands of Orlo's watch seemed to move. Time passing, and the hair on the back of Orlo's neck tingling with an approaching breeze. "Shh." "What?" said Minnie. "Shut up." Orlo held out his hands, turned them on his wrists. "A breeze," he said, luxuriating like a rajah as it blew by, thinking about his father, who had taught him early on that a cool breeze on a hot day is a luxury. "Talking ruins it," he said, like Minnie wasn't even there. When the breeze had passed, she put her head down and began to eat, breaking open claws on a test she could not pass, and wishing they'd boiled a tub of silver corn to go with the bounty of orange. Why be cruel, thought Orlo. People can hardly be blamed for who they are, and he was crucifying Minnie, like the one before her and the one to follow, for whom she was not. He knew how he felt before taking her bet. The loser bought lunch. But he forgot, forgetting better than a lie, because you're innocent when you dream. He forgot in the thrill of the race, tricking the ardent dilettante, his horse passing the sidecar in front of the Hopkins Dome. "Hey," he said, and she looked up from her crab. He'd scooped a pinky of dark yellow goop from the gray crevice of a large shell and held it out across the table. Minnie leaned forward, her large breast brushing the crabs in front of her, salt and pepper soiling a shirt she'd bought at a camping store. "The mustard," said Orlo. "Hepatato pancreas," she said, licking it clean. "It filters their blood." "Didn't know they had blood," said Orlo. Didn't know he had any either. Not for 700 days, trying, a gob of hepopancreas in his mouth, trying to remember the taste of those roasted potatoes. Potatoes done the Greek way. Only Greeks arrogant enough to take credit for a peeled potato cooked over a fire. With several hundred more days to go before their paths crossed. On the very street, the Yankelov sisters, dead chickens, Harry Atman with an apron and a cigar saying, "Hey-o, what gold you got for me today?" The very street where he was certain they would never meet. "Orlo," said Minnie. "Yes?" "That's the name of a Spanish instrument." "I used to think it was English," said Orlo, "because it's a family name and all of my family were Limeys, but somebody else told me it's old German." "Like the beer," said Minnie. "Had some once in Pittsburgh." But Orlo had never been west of Franklintown Road. "German. It's a derivation of Roland," he said. "And a wooden flute from Iberia," said Minnie. The crabs were so fresh you could still taste the river in them, but Minnie had bigger fish to fry. She wanted to see the Velvet Room, of which she'd heard whispers in certain waterfront speakeasies. Stag joints, seamen's clubs, places with parrots on the sill and monkeys hanging from the pipes along the ceiling, unlit and narrow places where she was taken for a dyke, a well-heeled prostitute, or both. Her family knew a professor who studied floorboards the way a homicide detective studies shoe prints and bicycle tracks. When Minnie was a teenager, over pie and sherry one evening at her parents' lake house, crumbs in his beard, fly unzipped, the scholar told her that if you knew how to look, impressions like grooves and grooves like a 78 RPM of Bessie Smith singing "Gimme a Pigfoot and a Bottle of Beer," you could tell how many people used a room and the patterns of their movements, whether they wailed or waltzed. Beneath the crab Minnie picked lay a soggy photo from the society page. Princess Marina of Greece and Denmark, with a parasol in Paris. Minnie lifted the paper for a better look and tore it at the edges, holding up the scrap, ragged and wet with crab guts, and said, "Is she as pretty as this?" Orlo stared for a long moment at the black-and-white image of a proper lady, a bit of a pinched nose, raven hair, and eyes as black as the ink his lover used to write notes to herself on the cracked plaster above her bed. "What did you say?" "Your princess. Is she as pretty as this?" In a silence neither his guest nor the wind could penetrate, Orlo gathered up the shells in his arms, walked to the pier, and tossed them in the river. Then he rolled up the dirty newspaper and dumped it in a trash barrel, along with the extra paper they hadn't used. From beneath the table, he brought out two canvas sacks that Minnie did not even know were there, and put the leftover steamed crabs in one and the ones not yet cooked in the other. A satchel in each hand, he walked out of the park as Minnie called after him, "But how will you get home?"
Rafael Alvarez's latest book is a collection of short stories called Tales from the Holy Land. Alvarez will be hosting his annual holiday fiction reading extravaganza, The Greatest Christmas Stories of All Time, on Saturday, December 20th at 2:30 p.m. at the Southeast Anchor Library, located at 3601 Eastern Avenue in Highlandtown. You can find more information about the author at alvarezfiction.com.